Okay, thank you very much. First, before I start with the agenda, I wanted to welcome Zahid Jamil to the meeting. He's a new representative from the business constituency, and this is his first meeting, so I wanted to welcome him to our meeting, to the council. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Avery. It's really nice to meet you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Glenn, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, certainly. Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach? Mike Rodenbach? I saw him on the call. He may be muted. Zahid Jamil?
Somebody needs to mute.
I'm here. Yeah.
Uta Deka?
Yes.
Christina Rosette? Cyril Chua? Is Christina muted?
Oh, I'm present. Sorry.
Yes. Robin Gross?
Present.
Norbert Klein?
Present.
Carlos Souza has sent his apologies. He will be absent. Tony Holmes has sent his apologies. He will be absent. Tony Harris?
I'm here.
Greg Roof? Adrian Kinderis? Tim Ruiz? Tom Keller has sent his apologies. He'll be absent. Jordi Iparagvira?
Yes, here. Yeah.
Chuck Gomes?
Here.
Edmund Chan? Yon Bing?
Present.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes, present.
Alan Greenberg?
Present.
From staff, we have Kurt Pritz, who sent his apologies. Denise Michel?
Yes.
Robert Hogarth?
Here.
Olaf Nordling?
Yep.
Marika Koenig?
Yes.
Liz Gaster?
Yes.
Craig Schwartz?
Yes.
And Tricia Drake will join us in about half an hour. Have I missed anybody?
Tim Ruiz just joined.
Tim Ruiz, awesome. Thank you very much.
Also, Glenn, can you hear me now?
Sarah, are we connecting?
Pardon?
Cheryl Chua, are we connecting to the call?
Thank you.
And Mike, I did hear you. It's a little low.
Yes.
All
yes,
right.
Still a little faint. Okay, thank you. We have quorum, and we also do have all the constituencies represented now. The next thing on the agenda is to update any statements of interest. All council members need to have statements of interest on file. I don't know, Zahid, if you've had a chance to do yours yet. Does anybody have an update to theirs they want to speak to at this point?
Avery, may I say that Zahid's statement of interest is on the website.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, please, if anyone does have a statement of interest, update it between the meetings and then mention the update at the next meeting that comes on. The next item is on the agenda. After the agenda originally came out, I did add two new business items. One is just a quick mention of the possibility of the so-called trans-silo meetings, and if we get that far, I'll explain. And one was a motion sent in by Mike Rodenbaugh on an issues report request. Also was added the Department of Commerce letter in relation to RAA and an AGP status report, since one had been submitted, and so I added them to the status report. Does anyone have any issues or amendments to the agenda? No? Okay, in which case I'll move on. Item 3 is to approve the GNSO Council minutes of 7 August 2008. Does anyone have any comments on those minutes? Will someone move those minutes?
I will, Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck. Is there a second?
Second, Tony Harris.
Okay, thank you, Tony. All those in favor of approving those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed to those minutes, please say nay. Thank you. Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. The next item on the agenda are status updates. The first one is on the ICANN board, and I asked Denise to do that. I have noted to hold the issue on the GNSO restructuring for item 9, since we have an agenda item dedicated to that, but would ask Denise to update us on anything else. Denise?
Thanks, Aubrey. It'll be a short update of the board at 28 August meetings. About 2.5 hours discussing the GNSO council restructuring proposal. So I'll defer discussion of that and just quickly note that 3 minutes of the meeting are posted on the website. The other action, in addition to the council restructuring, that the board did manage to get included a redelegation of .MS, approval of the ombudsman budget, a bylaw change relating to NOMCOM use of diversity for selecting board members, and selecting Tricia Drake as the 2009 NOMCOM chair. And that's it.
Okay, thank you. Other than on the issue of restructuring, are there any questions for Denise at this point? Okay, thank you, Denise. Moving on, Mike, can you give an update on the FastFlux PDP working group?
Yes. So the group has gotten a little bit off track, to be honest, over the last month or so, especially. We are still hoping to have, and I think the chances are pretty good, we still could have a final report in time for the Cairo meeting, and obviously ideally at least a week or 2 weeks in advance so we all could review it. But we are struggling definitely to answer some of the questions that were asked in the charter, and there's been some ancillary debates that we probably didn't need to have that have been distracting, but it's overall, you know, in my view, it's been quite productive. We've got a lot of information, but so the challenge now is putting it into a good report. Definitely, Marika's done a great job trying to herd cats and put together a lot of information into the initial draft that the working group is looking at now. We just got it a few days ago.
Okay, thanks. Before I open it up to questions, I have one. I've been trying to catch up on this and understanding that there may be some issues about charter changes or charter discussions. Is that something that will show up in the final report, as it were, or is that something that would show up sooner?
I think that we are going to move forward with the plan as it is now with the current charter. There's certainly complaints about the charter, but the charter is rather simple to answer questions as best we can. It turned out to be more difficult than thought to answer some of those questions, but we do have a lot of different opinions, so the idea is to at least try to get those opinions expressed into a report. But to answer your question directly, Harry, there will be a request, I think, in the final report for not a request, but a recommendation for another charter for another group to continue specific work.
Okay, and the idea is that it would include specific charter recommendations that we would then have to consider, is that
correct?
Okay, thank you. Open the queue to anyone else that has any questions, comments? Okay, hearing none, move to the next one. The Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy, PDP, Part A, PDP.
Okay, so that's me as well, and that's definitely going well. The group's been meeting for about a month now. We are about to send out requests for constituency statements, so we'll need everybody's help in getting those done in a timely fashion.
I think the schedule is pushed out past Cairo to have a final report at this point, but certainly we'd have an initial report in time for Cairo.
Okay, so that would be a change to the charter schedule?
No, there wasn't a schedule with the charter.
Okay, well, we should probably review specifics of any schedule at the next meeting, so that if we need to vote on any scheduling items, we can do it at the next meeting.
Sure. We can circulate the timeline that was disagreed in the last call, I think, by the working group. So I guess I could ask Marika to forward that to the list.
Okay. Yes, because as I remember in the charter, we didn't talk about specific dates, but we said in 3 months this, in X number of weeks that. So if there's any changes to that, that's fine, but we just need to basically get the council to explicitly approve the date. Okay, thanks. Any questions or clarifications or comments on the inter-register transfer policy, Part A, PDP?
Okay. I have a comment, Aubrey. It's Chuck.
Sure, please.
And I think there may have been somebody else. I don't know.
I didn't hear anyone else. Chuck.
Okay. All right. I haven't taken time to look at the template for constituency input, but I really commend the group for preparing a template so that it makes it easier to not only develop constituency statements, but also use the results. So I think that is an idea that may carry forward in the in our PDP revision effort, and this group's going to provide a good test of that, I think.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else have any comments, questions, clarifications? Okay, then the next item on the list, thank you, Mike, for both of us. The next item on the update status is new GTLDs. Craig?
I think actually Denise is going to take that one.
Oh, Denise is going to do that. All right. Denise?
Thanks. In the fourth quarter of the calendar year, which is October, November, December, is planning to post a number of items for public consultation. These include FRC, proposed GTLD budget, as well as economic study that's been commissioned by ICANN, which will be posted as part of consultations on the new GTLDs and the registrar model. Also regarding auctions, ICANN, during the use of auctions, a tie-breaking mechanism within the new GTLD process, some cases where more than one qualified app GTLD string. ICANN is being a paper for community discussion titled The Economic Case for Auctions, which explores the benefits of auctions as tie-breaking mechanism. The paper lays out a number of questions which ICANN is community feedback and comments. Form on this is open through September. Regarding string similarity, ICANN staff has recently completed a workshop with support, a partner who is assisting ICANN with the creation of an algorithm with the process for assessing similarity among those in existing GTLDs. Some of you may know search algorithms used by a number of patent and trademark offices throughout the world. So SORT has completed a big data algorithm and several tests with ICANN staff. This is being done to refine the parameters just how the algorithm could be successfully integrated as a tool to help implement NSO's recommendation to GTLD strings should not result in user confusion with existing TLDs. This will not be available in town. On January, here ICANN posted an announcement to inform the community that was exploring a for certification of back-end registry operators. There'll be the initiative was suggested as a FOSTA means to find the application process for these UTLDs and create a tool of pre-qualified registry operators to provide assistance in the event of registry failure. Of this initiative was also by inquiries from a range of members who have that creation of education would promote competition for technical service providers. During the exploration of the initiative, ICANN consulted with community members, including technical experts and GTLDN, the registries and registry service providers. ICANN assessed the operational benefits and risks of implementing type of initiative and ultimately made a business decision not to pursue certification as part of the opening new GTLD application round. This was based on a number of factors, including pre-existing operating plan and priorities that we have, resources required to develop and implement this prior to the launch of the new GTLD round, and source requirements associated with post-certification activities, including things like ongoing testing, recertification, and production for new compliance activities. That's it for the update on
Okay, I'm going to open up. You were breaking up a lot at the beginning. What was the first thing that you said was going to come out in the fourth quarter? I don't know if you're using a speakerphone or not, but it was, and I don't know if I was the only one for whom it was.
I couldn't hear well either.
Okay. And what was the first thing you said that was going to be posted in the fourth quarter?
The three items, and not necessarily in this sequential order, but the three items are expected to be published in the Q4 calendar year, the draft RFP.
Okay, that was the one I missed.
The proposed new GTLD budget, and then new GTLDs and the current industry registrar model. Part
okay,
of
thank you.
Will be the economic that's been commissioned.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I thought that I hadn't heard the draft RFP, and I was hoping that was one of them. That's why I asked.
I'd like
to open the queue. Yeah, open the queue for questions.
Tony Harris.
Clarification. Tony, anyone else?
Chuck,
anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Yes, one thing that Denise said, I was getting her voice a little broken up. It may be I have a bad line down here in Argentina. But I do believe I heard something about the community would be consulted when there's some clashing of when you have two people going for the same string. Did I understand correctly? Maybe it was my line.
Denise, would you like to clarify?
Okay, sure. So,
are you on a speakerphone?
Let me switch phones, see if that'll help.
Yeah, it's not Tony's line, it's everybody's.
Yeah.
There's an echo on your line, and the speakerphone is causing clipping.
Okay. Is this better?
Oh, much.
Much.
Great.
Also echoes louder, too.
So, Tony, I was referring to the work that ICANN has done with SWORD regarding the algorithm to assist with this. There was a workshop with ICANN staff and SWORD on this matter. I think
okay.
That's what you heard.
Well, I did hear that clearly, but there was, I think you said something that the there would be a consultation process when you have conflict with an application, and the community would be asked for their opinion. Did I hear that correctly, or perhaps that was jumbled up?
Denise, I can chime in here, too, if you like.
Sure, go ahead.
Greg.
I'm sorry, I have a bad echo on my line.
Tony, with regard to the algorithm work that SWORD has been doing for ICANN and the resolution of contention amongst either similar strings or exact strings, there's not a community element for input to that process, but the algorithm itself is designed to be a tool to provide a score and a guide to the community and to string examiners about how confusingly similar strings might be. But there's also intended to be a manual or a human check component to the process where a panel of examiners would review the results of the algorithm and either validate or overturn its guide. But there's not intended to be community dialogue on specific strings that are in the round.
Okay. Avery, could I ask a question on that?
Certainly.
Yes. What happens if you apply for a string, there is no exact similarity with an existing string or even a conflicting application, but the algorithm determines that it could be confusing to the consumers. Does the applicant, on receiving this information, does the applicant have the opportunity to change his string and reapply, or has he lost his application fee?
Well, within the round, there's no provision for changing strings and reapplying, because that would necessitate starting an evaluation process over. So once the round closes, the strings that are in the round are the strings that will be processed in that round. And as it's designed right now, and more information will be available when the draft RFP is posted, but if the algorithm was to say that the string is scored at a high confusingly similar rate, and the string examiner panel would validate that string as being confusingly similar to an existing PLD or a reserve name, then as it's designed now, that application would be denied.
Oh, thank you.
Avery Talon, could you put me on the list?
Sure. Okay, Chuck.
Okay, I have several questions, and I'll make them quick. First of all, Denise, is the timing, or Craig, either one, I don't care who responds, what are the chances that this information will be published before the Cairo meeting? Because it would be very helpful to know for our work on the weekend, especially on Saturday before the meeting.
Sure. I don't have an answer to that question. And I know that there is an interest in getting the dialogue started while we're in Cairo, but I can't commit to a date, but I can get back to you on it.
Okay. Yeah, the sooner the better for our GNSO council planning,
sure,
and for the open meetings on the weekend. Second, related to that, will all three of the postings occur at the same time, or will they occur at different times?
This is Denise. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Sorry, the operator's been working on my line.
Still an echo, but we can hear well.
So,
the preference would be to stagger the postings.
Okay, so they may not all come out at the same time. With regard to the competition study, and in particular registrar cross-ownership issue, I assume there will be some sort of a comment period on that, and I also assume that there will be a contract in the RFP when it's posted, but it seems to me that the contract would be missing any details with regard to the cross-ownership issue, and that would be delayed until some comment period and finalization. Is my assumption correct there? Can you add any clarity there?
Denise, Craig?
Yeah, Chuck, you asked some good questions, and I can't add any clarity at the moment, but I can get back to you on that as well when I get back to you on the question that you asked about publication of the materials prior to Cairo.
Okay, that'd be good. And then finally, this is a request. For the sake of the community, if it is possible, it seems like it would be very helpful to put this little status report that we received in writing, just so that people in general who have a lot of interest in this area get to see it, and it would also help because of the breaking up of the of Denise's report for all of us. So I would like to request, if it's possible, that a status report be posted for the whole community to see, not just on this meeting.
Yeah, this is Denise. Both of me. And I'll email this status report to the GNSO Council and Liaison List, and it'll also be posted on the new GTLD webpage.
Fantastic, thanks.
And I'm going to drop off now and dial back in and see if I can fix this.
Okay,
thanks.
I'm done, Aubrey.
Okay, Alan?
Aubrey, this is Tim. I'd like in the queue just...
Okay, Tim. Alan?
Yeah. Regarding the confusingly similar algorithm, maybe I missed this, but is this algorithm going to be publicly available for people to test prior to submitting? Of course, that won't test against other applicants, but it will against the installed base.
That is the intention.
Okay, thank you.
Tim?
Yeah, just wanted to confirm that the questions, especially those that Chuck were asking, the answers will be posted to the GNSO list and not to the individual askers of the questions, right?
That's
I would assume so, yes.
Yeah.
Please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay. Then thank you, Denise, who's not here at the moment, and Craig. The next one on the list was an update on what's happening with Fast Track and the comments and such as that, and where that's at. Was that going to be a Denise also?
May not have
Hi, this is Denise.
Denise, were you the one that was going to give us an update on what was happening with Fast Track and comments and such?
Yes, I can.
Thank you.
So there are a number of implementation issues that the board directed staff to work with the community to implement. A number of these work items are underway. In particular, the staff is working on a request for information to be issued to get a more concrete indication of the countries that are interested in using the Fast Track to submit an application for an ID NCCTLD. And we'll also post an update with some more details on this to the council list and also on the IDN webpage.
Okay, thank you. I'll open up the queue in a second. Quick question. Are the comments submitted by the GNSO and others being acted on at some point by the board, or what's the plan with that?
Yes, they're both, as appropriate, being factored into implementation work that the staff is doing, as well as being considered by the board, and some of these issues also will, of course, be discussed in Cairo.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to open up the queue. Anyone wish to ask questions for clarification or comment? No? Okay, thank you. Now, the next thing I had there was the DOC letter to ICANN. But isn't that, unless I'm confusing myself, isn't that related to the RAA amendments, or is there another letter?
Well, it's more than just the RAA amendments, I think, but it certainly that's a topic that was included in it.
Perhaps it's good to just then get an introduction to the letter now, and then I guess we'll get back to specifics on it later. Who was going to speak to the DOC letter to ICANN?
That would be me, Denise.
That would be you again. Okay, thank you.
So the letter was posted on the public comment forum from the Department of Commerce. The public comment forum was open for the RAA amendment, and the Department of Commerce will be thanked for, in particular, using the public comment forum to post their input, and their input will be summarized along with the other inputs posted on the public comment forum. A summary will be posted, and they'll be factored into the ongoing work on the RA amendments.
Okay, thank you. So, no, it doesn't really have a special status just because of who it's from. It's just a letter in the public comment.
Well, I didn't say it did not have special status, but that's the current way the letter will be dealt with, as with formal correspondence from any government. I would expect an acknowledgement to be sent to the government representative who provided the input from Paul Toomey, which is the normal process used for government correspondence.
Okay, thank you. Any comments or questions on that now? We'll get to some of the specifics of the RIA amendments in item 6, but any questions on that at the moment? Okay, thank you. And finally, on the status issue, the AGP, Craig, you had some comments?
Sure.
Update? Thank you.
We'll make this brief, recognizing that there's not a lot of time this morning, or there's a lot on the agenda. There are two items to discuss, and that is the consensus policy and work on the part of the cross-functional team at ICANN continues. And on the last call, it was committed that the draft implementation notes would be posted prior to the CAIRA meeting. Work on that continues. Tim Cole and I both reached out to our respective constituencies on the 27th of August to ask five relatively brief questions for help from the registries and the registrars in providing some guidance to language for the policy as it relates to defining extraordinary circumstances and defining recurring regularly. And given that the policy has language in it, that it's the registry's sole discretion on whether to grant an exemption or not, we thought it prudent to ask the registries and the registrars for input on language around this section. Input was requested by September 10th, which is next week, and I believe that we'll probably get a set of these draft implementation notes posted shortly thereafter and well in advance of the CAIRA meeting. The other piece of news to share is that Neustar has again provided ICANN with the authority to release some information about its experience with its AGP modification service in its second month of implementation, much like its experience in June, which saw about a 97% decrease in AGP deletes compared to the prior month. They had the same experience in July. So their overall total number of AGP deletes is almost nil now compared to what it was prior to implementation of its service. With regard to Afilias's implementation of the service, they have not done so yet, and they have not made a commitment as to when they will do that. And then lastly, with regard to the AGP budget provision, given that that was implemented on July 1st, we, in August, finally got a set of numbers for the performance in July of AGP deletes relative to those in June. And as soon as the confidentiality period expires on registry operator monthly reports, we'll be able to make that information available to the council and the community.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, clarification?
This is Tim.
Okay, Tim, anyone else? Okay, please go ahead, Tim.
So Craig, the confidentiality period that'll expire like January, is that about right?
About three months
after September?
Well, 3 months, if we want to report July numbers, it would be 3 months after July, which would be November 1.
So you won't wait for the entire quarter. You'll be able to do it by month. Okay.
I think the community is hearing feedback as quickly as it can.
Right. Okay. Appreciate that.
We should. That is your bookkeeping fast enough to be able to
make sure we have the feedback in Cairo?
My bookkeeping is up to date right now, and I have that feedback.
Okay.
I just can't share it with you yet.
Got it.
Yeah, thank you. Anyone else wish to comment or question? Okay, thank you. That was quite a lot of status. Thank you all for the status. I want to move on to item 5 now. Item 5 is discussion, hopefully a decision, on the PDP for the IRTP denial definitions. Now, before I start, I sent out an email earlier, since we were informed a couple days ago that the proxy voting for issues reports, for policy decisions being forwarded to the board, and for any elections that we actually did in meeting, as opposed that we already do using our ballots, could now be submitted to a, could now have a proxy vote for those that were absent. In the discussions that were had on the implementation, as I said in the note I sent out briefly before the meeting, there were two possible methods of doing this that were both approved by the General Counsel as being acceptable. The first one was basically to use essentially a variant of the email voting procedure that we use for elections and such, which is a fairly heavyweight procedure that has an anonymity and such to it. The other one, which was also deemed acceptable, was that after the meeting where there was a motion and the motion there were people absent, that Glenn would send out a message saying there's a motion that was been voted on, it is open for proxy, it's open for absentee ballot by anyone who wasn't at the meeting. What they need to do then is be aware of the email. They need to request a ballot. She individually sends a ballot to each of them that includes the message with a request for them to say yes, no, or abstain. If it's a policy going on to the board, they need to add a reason for the abstention, as we do in the meeting when one asks why one abstains from a policy going forward. And they have to return that to Glenn, who tabulates them, puts together, and that happens within 72 hours, unless we have decided beforehand, because we knew someone was on vacation and unreachable, or some other reason. Now, I'm proposing that as a process, sort of taking a chair's liberty to sort of say, let's go with that process, especially until we've had experience and in terms of dealing today. But I wanted to give people a chance to object to following that process. If we don't follow that process, then obviously we'll have to put a figuring out a process and a discussion on it on the agenda for some time. So does anyone object to following that process, the lightweight, with Glenn administering the vote directly by email, especially starting now?
I don't object, Aubrey, but I do have a comment.
Sure.
Is there any reason, or maybe it's more of a question, is there any reason why we need absent members to send a request for a ballot? Why wouldn't we just send out the motion with a ballot, and they have the 72 hours to respond, or whatever other time period we might decide in a specific case?
I think because it's a directed ballot to someone's known email account, as opposed to something that's on a list and could be messed with in some way. So therefore, there's a request, and it's basically a full protocol of a handshake,
It's for validation of the person.
Yes.
Gotcha.
In other words,
okay. All right.
Glenn has an approved email address for each of the participants. That basically, her doing that and getting the response, you know, them requesting, her sending, and then back is what makes her able to validate that so-and-so really was the person that voted.
Okay, that's fine.
Any other comments? So hearing no objection to following that, we can do that for item 5, should we get as far as taking a vote. Okay, item 5, and we have a motion on that, is basically discussion decision on the IRTP denial definitions. Perhaps Olaf wants to give us a recap from the comments, etc., although I think this has been discussed and we've seen that there were no significant comments there, and I'll go through the motion. But Olaf, would you like to add anything?
Thank you, Avery. Well, just to recapitulate. well, we are at the very end of this PDP. The final report was produced, and the council deliberations following that decided to launch a drafting group to produce text proposals for these four denial definitions, which they the drafting group did, and suggested a new text for denial reasons 8, 9, while proposing to defer denial reasons 5 and 7 to the upcoming PDPC. This suggestion was put forward for public comment, and there was one public comment received, and that was from the IPC constituency, which reiterated its suggestions, which had been discussed before in the working group or in the drafting group, with the conclusion that there were good suggestions, but they went deeper than the actual purpose of the PDP, which was clarification of these reasons. It actually went a step further. So hence, that was also to be reconsidered during addressing these items in PDPC. So what we have at the end of the day, two text proposals for denial reasons 8 and 9, which then had full support from the drafting group, and now let's see if it has the full support of the council.
Okay, thank you. So what I'm going to do is read the motion at the moment and then open it for discussion. I've listed myself as the person moving it because I believe it's procedural to move it, although it still does need to be seconded. Motion on IRTP denial definitions PDP. Whereas on 20 November 2007, the GNSO Council launched a policy development process to clarify four of the 9 transfer denial reasons enumerated in the inter-registrar transfer policy. And this PDP has followed prescribed PDP steps as stated in the bylaws, resulting in a final report delivered on 9 April 2008. And the GNSO Council, in its deliberations regarding the final report, resolved to launch a drafting group to propose new provision text for the four denial reasons addressed, and the drafting group reached consensus on new text for two of the denial reasons, 8 and 9, while reaching agreement that the two other denial reasons, 5 and 7, required a more in-depth review than mere clarifications of the originally intended meaning, and that such a review could preferably be undertaken as part of the scope of the foreseen IRTP. PDP resolved that denial reason number 8, in which the current text, reads, a domain name is in the first 60 days of an initial registration period, be amended to read, the transfer was requested within 60 days of the creation date, as shown in the registry WHOIS record for the domain name. That denial reason number 9, in which the current text reads, a domain name is within 60 days, parentheses, or a lesser period to be determined, closed pan, after being transferred, open pan, apart from being transferred back to the original registrar, in cases where both registrars so agree and or where a decision in the dispute resolution process so directs, closed pan, be amended to read, a domain is within 60 days, open pan, or a lesser period to be determined, closed pan, after being transferred, open pan, apart from being transferred back to the original registrar, in cases where both registrars so agree and or where a decision in the dispute resolution process so directs, closed pan. Transferred shall only mean that an inter-registrar transfer or transfer to the registrar of record has occurred in accordance with the procedures of this policy.
Three,
that the work on denial reasons number 5, in which the current text reads, no payment for previous registration period, open paren, including credit card chargebacks, close paren, if the domain name is past its expiration date or for previous or current registration periods, if the domain name has not expired. In all such cases, however, the domain name must be put into registrar hold status by the registrar of record prior to the denial or transfer. That this be suspended until such time as PDPC of the IRTP issues PDP is initiated. The results of work done by the draft team should be included in the initial report to be done by the staff for this potential PDP. 4. That the work on denial reason 7, in which the current text reads, a domain name was already in lock status, provided that the registrar provides a readily accessible and reasonable means for the registrar name holder to remove the lock status. That this be suspended until such time as PDPC of the IRTP issues PDP is initiated. The results of work done by the draft team should be included in the initial report to be done by the staff for this potential PDP. That's the end of the motion. Do I have a second for it?
This is Chuck. I'll second it.
Okay, I heard Chuck first. Chuck Gomes. I open up discussion on this. Is there any discussion? Okay, hearing no discussion, I'd like to ask Glenn to call a roll vote on it.
Certainly, Avery. Philip Shepherd?
Yes.
Mark Rodenbach?
Yes.
Zahi Jamil?
Yes.
Uta Dekker?
No.
Christina Rosette?
Abstain.
Cyril Chua?
Abstain.
Tony Harris?
In favor.
Robin Grass?
Yes.
Norbert Klein? Norbert? Tim Ruiz?
Yes.
Jordy?
Yes.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Edmund is absent. He's just let me know on the list. Yon Bing?
Yes.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to record reasons for the 2 abstentions. Christina?
It really has not been something that I've had an opportunity to discuss fully with my constituency.
Okay, thank you. Cyril? Can you give me a reason for abstention to record with the vote? Are you on mute, Cyril? Can you hear me, or are you still there? Okay, I'll go on. I actually don't see him on the list at the moment, so perhaps he's
on the call. Second page, Avery.
Oh, the second page. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, well, Cyril, please, if you can hear me and aren't on mute, could you please record a reason for the abstention?
Yeah, it's still showing on talk, but... Okay,
leave that as pending. So, can you... Glenn, give us a vote at this point.
Fourteen in favor, 1 no, and 2 abstentions.
Okay, thank you. So at this point, since we do have the absentee voting, we'll leave the ballot open for 72 hours to give those who aren't here a chance to register a vote.
Does that include... No.
I think it concludes Norbert if he fell off the call. It is sort of... Because I don't see him. them at the moment, or do I? No, Norbert has disconnected off the call. So, yes, I would include him on that. He's been having telephone difficulty, if no one objects. Okay, thanks. I'll move on to the next one, and we'll record a status on that after this. The discussion on the RAA amendments. Now, we've had a discussion of the DOC letter, and we've also, well, we had a description of the DOC letter, and we've had comments from Mike on the list. I don't know if anyone has responded to them. And I guess the question is there, and I get, oh, no, there was a discussion. Chuck also responded to those notes. And so I basically just wanted to make sure that this discussion was open and on this list, and I put it on the agenda. I'm not sure that there is any policy action for the GNSO to take, but certainly wanted to bring the topic up to the list. So would anyone like to be in a queue to speak on this at the moment?
Aubrey, it's Christina. I would, please.
Okay, Christina, anyone else?
This is Denise. I'd like to get in the queue.
Okay, Denise, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Christina.
I was just hoping that I could get a clear understanding as to why this particular statement that was put in during the public comment period is on the agenda.
Okay, I put it on the agenda because it was sent to the email list, and there seemed to be questions that people might want to look at is the only reason I put it on.
All right, so it's not intended to single this out as opposed to the other public comments that were put in.
Right.
Okay.
It's just that it was sent specifically, right.
Okay, then, and I realized, I guess the one question, I apologize if this came up during the status report. I dropped off the call for about 15 minutes. I don't believe that I've seen the staff report on the public comment, and I was wondering if we could perhaps get some information as to when that would be available.
Okay, thank you. Denise?
Yes. The services staff has the lead on the RAA.
You're very faint at the moment.
Can you hear me now?
That's better.
So the services staff has the lead on the RAA amendments, and they plan on posting a summary of all the public comments shortly. They'd also like to provide a more substantive update on the RAA amendments to the council. If you have time at your next council meeting, Kurt Fritz and Tim Cole are unavailable and in transit during this meeting, but if you have time on the next council agenda, we're able to post it.
Uh-huh. Aubrey, it's Chuck. Could I get in queue?
Certainly. Chuck, anyone else want to be in the queue? Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
One of the things we talked about yesterday in the registry constituency with regard to finalization of the RAA amendments is that we need to keep in mind whatever is decided with regard to registrar cross-ownership to make sure that that issue is dealt with in the amendments as well. So I guess what we're just bringing up is a timing issue to make sure that that particular issue is addressed depending on how that falls out.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to comment or question at this point? If not, I'd suggest that we'll just hold it off on the agenda table until next week when we can have the update. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing no objection, I'll move on to the next, which is the Who Is Hypothesis Study Group. The report came out 26th August, and we have a motion on the table, which I guess is from Chuck. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Chuck, would you like to begin on this one?
Yeah, let me first of all ask, is there any need to provide any review of the report before I look at the motion? Okay, not hearing any. I think people have had a lot of time to look at this, so let me get down to the right motion here. Okay. Okay. I made the motion. It has not been seconded yet. I will read it. Whereas on 31 October 2007, the generic name supporting organization council concluded that a comprehensive, objective, and quantifiable understanding of key factual issues regarding the GTLD WHOIS system will benefit future GNSO policy development efforts. And before defining the details of these studies, the council solicited suggestions from the community for specific studies, topics of studies on WHOIS that community stakeholders recommend be conducted. And whereas suggestions for WHOIS studies were submitted, ICANN staff prepared the report titled Report on Public Suggestions on Further Studies of WHOIS, dated 25 February 2008. On 28 March 2008, the GNSO Council resolved to form a group of volunteers, the WHOIS Study Group, to review and discuss the report on public suggestions on further studies of WHOIS and develop a proposed list, if any, of recommended studies for which ICANN staff will be asked to provide cost estimates to the council. And there was not agreement in the WHOIS study volunteer group regarding whether or not any study should be conducted. On 25 June 2008, the GNSO Council resolved to form another group of volunteers, the WHOIS Hypothesis Working Group, to review the study recommendations offered through the public comment period and by the GAC and prepare a concise list of hypotheses to be tested, derived from the study recommendations and suggested benefits, and to deliver a report containing the above with any supporting rationale to the council. And the WHOIS Hypothesis Working Group delivered its report to the council on 26 August 2008. Resolved, the GNSO Council expresses sincere appreciation and thanks to the WHOIS Hypothesis Working Group. Council representatives, including liaisons, are asked to, number one, forward the report to their respective constituencies as soon as possible for discussion and comment as applicable. Two, be prepared in the council meeting on 25 September 2008 to have a preliminary discussion. And three, in the council meeting on 16 October 2008 to start development of a proposed list, if any, of recommended studies for which ICANN staff will be asked to prepare cost estimates to the council. And then three, ICANN policy staff are asked to forward the report as soon as possible directly to the GAC and ALAC for comment before the 16 October council meeting if possible.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second for this motion?
I'll second. This is Robin.
Thank you, Robin. Okay, I'd like to open up discussion. Anyone wish to discuss this?
Mike Rosenbaugh.
Mike, anyone else wish to be in the queue? Okay, go ahead, Mike.
Okay, we had a couple, we were talking about this in the business constituency and just had a friendly amendment, hopefully, to the second bullet. Right now it says to develop a proposed list of recommended studies for which ICANN staff would be asked to prepare cost estimates. And we just wanted to flesh that out a little bit, the proposed list concept, and say instead a list of recommended studies that demonstrates balance in views and sufficient policy relevance justify having ICANN staff prepare cost estimates.
Could you say that one more time, a little bit louder, Mike?
Yes, sorry.
Just the amendment, yes.
Yeah, so just replacing proposed list to the end with a list of recommended studies that demonstrates balance in views and sufficient policy relevance to justify having ICANN staff prepare cost estimates.
I personally would accept that as a friendly amendment.
This is Tim.
Okay, Tim, it's been accepted as a friendly amendment, but I should be able to type it in, and I'm not able yet. So it's to start development of a proposed list. It still has the if any, correct? And then it's of recommended.
Sure.
Tell me what words to write in here.
There you go. That's fine. Then leave it the same and just strike out for which ICANN staff will be asked and to the end and replace it with that demonstrates balance in views and sufficient
demonstrates balance in views
and sufficient policy relevance
and sufficient policy relevance
to justify having ICANN staff prepare cost estimates. The only goal here was to try to encourage people to develop a balanced list, so hopefully we can find some consensus rather than having some people submit, you know, one-sided lists, and we've got right back to where we've started on this process.
Okay.
You want to just read the last line from?
Yeah, let me read what I typed, and then I'll restate it so people can see it. So basically, three, in the council meeting of 16 October 2008, the talked development of a proposed list, if any, of recommended studies that demonstrate balance in views and sufficient policy relevance to justify having ICANN staff prepare cost estimates.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Let me save it. Okay, Tim, I had you
on the queue.
Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, I was just trying to better understand what the amendment was, but I got it now. So on.
Okay, and I have saved it so people can look at it. Okay, any other discussion? So that's been accepted as a friendly amendment. And I assume. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, oh, I didn't write in the seconder. The seconder was Robin. Okay, at this point, I can. Any objection to calling for a ayes and nays vote as opposed to a polling vote? Okay, hearing no objection, all those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Okay, it is passed. Thank you. Okay, moving on the agenda. The next thing is discussion on GNSO response concerning geo-regions. Olga, would you like to speak to this? A report did come out on 26 August, and there is a motion that has been put in, I believe, by Olga, and seconded by Chuck. So go ahead, Olga.
Okay, thank you, Aubrey. I don't know if there is the need to review the report that was sent a week ago to the council. I didn't receive any comments from other council members. Is there a need to review any part of it, or we just would go to the motion, or you want me to talk about how we worked in the working group? I don't know if it's necessary.
No, I don't know that we need to do that. Does anyone want to discuss or ask any questions, clarification questions on the document before Olga goes into the motion? Hearing none, Olga, please read the motion.
Okay. To find it here. In its meeting on, sorry?
No, go ahead.
On 2nd November 2007, the ICANN Board approved Resolution 792 requesting that the ICANN community, including the GNSO, CCNSO, ASO, DAC, and ALAC, provide the ICANN staff with input on the CCNSO Council's resolution relating to ICANN's geographic region. In an email to the GNSO Council dated 15 July 2008, Denise Michel requested the GNSO to provide input, if any, on the suggested formation of a community-wide working group and its mandate. In its meeting on 17 July 2008, the GNSO Council agreed to form a drafting team in response to the ICANN Board request on ICANN geographic regions. The drafting team submitted its recommendations for GNSO comments to the GNSO Council on 26 July 2008. Resolved, the GNSO Council expressed sincere appreciation and thanks to the following members of the drafting team. Excuse me. Olga Cavalli, non-com appointee and chair. Clint Crosby, IPC. Glenn Saint-Genis, ICANN staff. Chuck Baum, Registry Constituency, Tony Harris, ISP Constituency, Robert Hogarth, ICANN Staff, Marina Konings, ICANN Staff, Christina Rosette, IPC, Tim Ruiz, Registry Constituency, Philip Shepard, CBUC Constituency, ICANN Staff, Registry Constituency, Council Representatives, are asked to forward the recommendations to their respective constituencies for discussion and comment as applicable. Be prepared to finalize the GNSO comments in the council meeting on 25 September 2008.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to open the queue for any comments. I'd like to ask one to begin with, which is, do people believe, the constituency members, that there is sufficient time for these comments to be discussed, developed in their constituencies, mm-hmm. and published 1 week before the 25 September meeting, or would we be better off with a 16 October date on this?
Avery, Philip here. Just a comment on that?
Yes, please.
My feeling is yes, there is sufficient time, because what we've done in the group, as you'll see by reading the detail, is really quite high level. We intentionally avoided going into any more specific questions which might entail more in-depth constituency views, because essentially we're saying we wanted to contribute to a cross ICANN group, and we felt that those sort of questions would be addressed at that group. So our work was intentionally high level, and I think there's sufficient time for constituencies to respond to that high-level suggestions, those principles, in the timescale that Olga indicated.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Just a question, Aubrey. What were you talking about a week before the council meeting?
Well, normally, if we're going to, we have recommendations, and anything that's going to be voted on or any changes or whatever needs to be published.
Oh, I understand,
but
I don't understand what would need to be published here, other than a motion.
Well, normally when you forward recommendations to your respective constituencies for discussion and comment, those comments would need to be written up so that all the council members could see them and have them available for discussion.
Oh, okay.
So
since you're
asking for comment,
okay,
those comments need to be read and acted upon, which means they need to be available a week before the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments, questions? Okay, any objection to taking an ayes and nays vote on this? You're hearing no objection. All those in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, please say nay. Any abstentions? Okay, the motion is passed. Thank you. Thank you, Olga. Thank you, drafting team. Okay, moving on. The next one is item 9. Discussion, decision, GNSO restructuring, and plan. So I guess the best way to start with this... First of all, let me check something. Do we have Tricia on the line?
Yes, you do.
Yes, we do, and you've probably been waiting quite a while while we went through everything. Is there any objection to taking the... because this one could take a while, and then item 11 has to be done today. But as we have Tricia here and as she's been waiting, is there any objection to taking item 10 before 9 and 11?
Avery, I'm working away here, and I don't have any problem taking my turn, so to speak.
Okay. Thank you.
And also, obviously, with GNSO review, I have a distant interest in it now.
Okay. So in which case, I will try to... We have three things that we definitely need to get to here, 9-11. We obviously have to pass on item 11. So I will try to restrict each of these three to their 15 minutes, and that means that we will have time to get them in. So, Denise, can I ask you to start on the GNSO restructuring?
Sure. I've sent to the council and liaison a couple
copy of the resolution that was approved by the board last week. I'll quickly summarize that, and as well as the very lengthy discussion the board had regarding council restructuring and the DNSO working group's proposal. So the board made some key decisions at its 28th meeting, but the board's consideration and discussion of the GNSO working group proposal is ongoing, and they hope to come to closure on the remaining issues during the next board meeting, which is scheduled for the end of September. I'll skip the whereases and read the resolve so all of you have that information in case you haven't seen the email. Resolve, on balance, the working group report addresses many challenges facing the community in a way that is consistent with the overarching goals of the GNSO improvements package and the BGC GNSO review working group that developed it. Resolve, the board endorses the direction of the working group report and supports the bicameral voting structure of the new council. The board supports the establishment of one house, described as the contracted party house in the report, and directs that this house initially will have three representatives from each stakeholder group, registrars and registries, plus one voting nominating committee appointee. The second house, described in the report as the non-contracted party house, will be composed of six representatives from each stakeholder group, the commercial and non-commercial, plus one voting nominating committee appointee. Resolve, the board accepts the working group proposal to seat one voting NCA representative in each of the two houses, as noted. The board also directs that a third independent NOMCOM appointee representative continue to serve on the council. Resolve, the board directs the GNSO council to work with ICANN staff on an implementation plan for board approval that creates a transition to this new structure by the beginning of calendar year 2009. The board requests that existing constituencies confirm their status with the board during the intervening time period, and requires constituencies to formally confirm their status every 3 years to ensure that they continue to meet the requirements of Article 10, Section 5, Subsection 3 of the ICAM bylaws. This will be an opportunity for existing constituencies to demonstrate compliance with the principles of representativeness, openness, transparency, and fairness set forth in the ICAM bylaws. The board also encourages new constituencies to submit requests for certification, especially during this transition period. Resolve, the board appreciates the significant amount of work performed by the working group and extends its sincere appreciation to working group members, and then it lists all of the working group members for their efforts in this matter. A voice vote was taken on this resolution, and it was approved unanimously by a vote of 13-0. As I indicated, the board spent about 2.5 hours, more than its allotted time for the whole meeting, on GNSO Council restructuring. There was a significant amount of discussion about the stakeholder groups and the appropriate number of counselors that should be seated for each group. There was also an extensive discussion regarding the NOMCOM appointees, and in particular the third NOMCOM appointee, its voting and non-voting status, and whether or not it should be seated and where. They also discussed the various voting thresholds proposed by the working group, as well as discussing the proposal for selecting board directors from the council and selecting a council chair. They also discussed some of the transition issues. And, of course, the issues that are specifically noted in the resolution, including the idea of existing constituencies renewing their certification during the transition period. I can go through the initial minutes in more detail or take questions, whichever you would find more useful.
I think it'd be good to actually open it up to questions for clarifications and such.
I have a question.
Mike Rosenbaum. Excuse me, I missed who?
Mike.
Mike, okay, sorry.
Tony Harris.
Anyone? Tony, anyone else?
John Phillips.
Philip.
And Christina, please.
Right. Mike, Tony, Philip, who else?
Christina.
Christina?
Chuck.
Christina, Chuck. Okay. It's a good starting list. Mike.
Okay, two questions. One, what does it mean that constituencies would need to confirm their status with the board? I guess during the next 3 to 6 months, as far as I can tell. And then, secondly, you mentioned a bunch of other issues that the board discussed, but are not mentioned in the resolution. So does that mean that those are going to be left to the council to decide?
So the idea here regarding the existing constituencies as is that given all of the recommended changes in the and improvements in the Board Governance Committee GNSO improvement package that was approved previously by the board, taking that into consideration as well as the principles and the bylaws for how constituencies should operate, the board felt that it would be a good practice to have constituencies sort of renew or reconfirm their certification with the board every 3 years, and that during this transition period that this also should be done. I anticipate that, given the board's call for an implementation plan, that this would be a good issue for the council to incorporate in the implementation plan, providing the council and all of the constituencies thoughts on how this renewal or reconfirmation should occur. On the other issues that I listed as discussion points during the call, those are points that continue to be discussed by the board, and again, this will be on the board's September meeting agenda, and they expect to come to closure on the rest of the issues that I mentioned and that are addressed in the working group report at that meeting. That's not to say that some of those also won't be implementation issues, but the discussion continues at the board level on many of these.
Thank you. Tony?
Yes, I have two questions. The first, I got a little confused in the when you detailed the two bicameral, well, it's 12 voting seats in contracted parties and 12 voting seats in the non-contracted parties. That's clear. But the current structure has three nominating committee appointees who occupy seats on the council, and I was not too clear as to what their function will be in the new structure.
Sure. So the board has initially seated six representatives in the contracted party house and 12 representatives in the non-contracted party house.
Oh, there's only six in the contracted party then?
Right, three from registrars and three from registries.
Okay, I had that wrong. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then six representatives from commercial and six from non-commercial.
Okay, fine.
Plus one voting nominating committee appointee in the contracted party house and one voting nominating committee appointee in the non-contracted party house, plus a quote-unquote third independent nominating committee appointee representative on the council. The status, location, voting and non-voting status of this NCA representative is still being discussed by the board.
Yes, okay. The second question is, I think I heard you mention four board directors. Does that mean that the new GNSO as a total body will be electing four board directors, or am I mistaken in assuming that?
I'm sorry, Tony. Could you repeat your question?
Yeah, I think I understood. It could be my mistake that instead of electing two board directors, as happens right now with the GNSO, you mentioned it might be four directors, or did I understand that wrongly?
No, that was a misunderstanding.
Okay.
There's
sorry.
Been no change. There's been no change in the total number of board of directors that the council elects. It's still two. You'll recall that the working group proposal had proposed very specific ways in which those two directors would be elected, and that proposal elicited discussion at the board level and continues to be discussed.
Okay. Sorry for the confusion.
No problem.
Okay.
Thanks. Niamh, two questions. One, a follow-up on that board-level discussion. So the board is still considering how it wants to do that. They haven't rejected the consensus group proposal, which was basically one director per house.
Correct. That was not addressed in the resolution, and it's a point that's still being discussed by the board.
Okay. And my second question was on numbers. The consensus group recommendation had been that each house chose its representation in terms of number of people based on certain brackets that had been put in the report. Clearly the board has rejected that idea of each house doing it and specified numbers. What was the reason for that rejection?
Let me see.
Actually, if I can ask a question while you're thinking through, I actually thought that the recommendation that was put through, and Rob, who was the author of that, can clarify, had that the consensus had given a range and had left the decision to the board. What was in the report that Rob submitted?
Yeah, excuse me, this is Rob. Avery, the specific language of the recommendation, and I'll read it to you, said the number of registry and registrar stakeholder representatives will be determined by the ICANN board based on input from these stakeholder groups. That was for the contracted party house. And there's that similar language in the composition of the non-contract party house.
So in other words, they did not reject, they accepted and then made a decision.
Right, and I think part of that decision was the board feeling that the numbers contained in the resolution were the appropriate initial numbers to use for the council. And they're also mindful of the challenges of implementation of all of the improvements. The improvement package as well as the specific council restructuring proposal and their desire to have the transition happen as quickly and smoothly as possible and the recognition that if we're able to make the council restructuring transition coincide with the natural election processes that many constituencies go through at the end of the calendar year, that would be a positive thing. So that also factored into their decision to set the numbers now.
Okay, thank you. Christina.
I just want to make a statement for the record that it was the view of the IPC that its support of the consensus, virtual consensus proposal, was very heavily dependent on the board seat allocation criteria. And to the extent that it may have been represented to the board that the decision to not accept that recommendation at this point would be an acceptable exception, the IPC vigorously disputes that characterization.
Thank you, Christina. There is a the General Counsel's office has expressed a concern about whether the approach recommended is an appropriate one and consistent with ICANN's bylaws relating to the Board of Directors.
I'm aware of that, but that's a very different thing from saying that the decision has to be deferred pending resolution of this issue than characterizing it essentially as being something that the working group members would accept.
Sure.
For other reasons
and thank
on precedent.
Right, and thanks for that clarification. And then on my end, I just wanted to elaborate for the benefit of the council that this is an issue that's being actively considered by the board.
It's Alan. Do you put me on the list?
Yeah, Chuck.
Yes, two things. Regarding the remaining issues, and it seems to me, if my memory is correct, that there are three main ones. That's the selection of the board directors, the selection of chair, and also whether or not the third NOMCOM independent member is a voting or non-voting. There may be others, too, but those are three, I think, significant ones. The thresholds, too. Thank you, Arvey. That's correct. So there's the fourth one. And but my question, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, Denise, but is it expected that the board will make definitive decisions and direct us which way to go, or is it possible that some or all of those would be given back to the council to reach consensus on? I'll stop at that one, and I'll come back to my other one, and I'll give you a chance to respond to that.
So why don't we take them one at a time?
Well, I only gave you one, I thought. But,
oh, okay. Which one is it you want me to...
Yeah, on the remaining issues, is it... should we expect that the board will give specific direction in terms of how those will be resolved, or is it possible that some or all of them would be given back to the council to reach consensus on themselves?
Yeah, it's possible that, of course, it's possible that they can refer some things back to the council or ask the council to address some items, certainly in the implementation plan. My expectation is that the board will come to a decision regarding the voting threshold, that they'll also come to a decision regarding the fate of the third NOMCOM appointee, that they'll make a decision regarding the selection of directors and the council chair.
Okay, thank you.
And also I also wanted to note that of course, the NOMCOM appointees and the selection of directors for the board also have connections to ongoing review and improvement efforts that the board and the board governance committee are also considering, and they're just finishing a board review, an independent board review as well. So the board's also trying to factor these things in and make sure they take into account interconnected issues on these matters as well. So that's a long way of saying they may continue to consider a couple of these issues that relate to other matters beyond September.
Okay, and I would hope that, especially with regard to the thresholds issue, and probably the, well, I'll stop with that one, the thresholds issue. There was a lot of very careful thought and consideration that went into those by the working group, and I would assume that that's all being communicated, because not unlike what the IPC said, what Christina said with regard to the IPC, this total package thing was really important. A lot of these things are interrelated in terms of decisions that we made. Going on from there, you mentioned that the requirement to confirm status by each constituency should be included in the implementation plan. Are you referring to the high-level implementation plan that actually we have a motion on and have had for several months, or is that a broader implementation plan that would be subsequent to that?
Yes, so it was more of a suggestion on my part that the council and constituencies would want to give some thought to addressing this in a implementation plan.
Let me clarify where I'm going with that. I think I support that. That's great, and I think that's the way it should be. But I'd like to make it. I think it's important to make it distinct from the implementation plan that has already been developed or that may be modified slightly in the next couple of weeks. If we include this particular thing in that plan, I think it could cause unnecessary delays.
Right. So the implementation plan referred to in this latest resolution, I think there's an expectation that it's a very focused implementation plan that addresses the transition of the council, and that it be done, obviously, within the next few months, so the full council transition and restructuring can be completed by the beginning of 2009, recognizing that the much broader implementation plan and all of the other elements contained in the Board Governance Committee set of CNSO improvements would be addressed in a much broader implementation effort that the council is working on.
Thank you. I think that answers my questions. And so it's really separate from this high-level plan. I won't call it a top-level plan that we've considered. Thank you.
Right.
Okay. Okay. I have one more person, and then at that point, and before I go on, at that point, I do want to cut the discussion on it. Otherwise, we won't get other things done, and there's obviously a lot more discussion. I'm the one that put a motion in for today. I've basically been carrying forward the draft motion, and I'm pulling it for today because it's obviously not a time to vote for it, but I'll get into that further at the end. Alan?
Yep. I found it rather curious that there are statements at the end of the board motion that constituencies will have to, on a regular basis, demonstrate compliance with the principles of representativeness, openness, and transparency and fairness, but that is not the case for stakeholder groups. Yet the issue of, for stakeholder groups which have more than one constituency, and there's at least one now and maybe more by the transition period, there's no statement about how they will select council representatives and that be fair, open, transparent, and such. And I thought that's a major gap, and it's not clear whether that's a minor implementation detail or the board will decide, or it just seems to be a huge open gap.
Sounds like it's something for the implementation to look into.
Well, but I would have thought the board would want to verify that level of transparency on a regular basis also, since that decides who's seated on the council.
Right, Alan, so I think the expectation here is that we will have an opportunity to address that in as part of the implementation plan, and they address the constituencies specifically because of the bylaw requirement that already exists for certifying new constituencies, and refer to that as
okay. What I'd like to suggest at the moment is, first of all, that the motion that I put on the table, or rather haven't put on the table, just been carrying from week to week, that be further deferred. What I'd like to ask and find out if there's any objection is for, one, to continue having discussions on the email list. I'm sure there are more questions as people read this, digest it, go back to their constituencies. But two, ask the planning team to get back together to look at its plan in regard to this particular resolution, to make any amendments to that plan if necessary. As part of that, I believe that, first of all, we must get someone from the registrar constituency to participate in those discussions. And also anyone that wasn't participating before who believes that they want to participate now, that be open to them. But basically, to sort of take the initial planning we did, look at it in light of what's been put on the table now, so that at the next meeting, so now take the next 2 weeks to sort of review that, and at the next meeting have a motion on how we proceed through to the goal of the beginning of the year, as opposed to trying to do it live in this meeting now. Does anyone object to following that process?
No, I think that's a good idea, Aubrey. I would like to suggest that the registrars provide at least one person for that within the next 24 hours, and that a meeting be scheduled of the planning committee and as early as possible next week. Possibly we could use the same time we were using before. I don't know if that conflicts.
Certainly. Yeah, and we can do that on the planning team list, but I would emphasize, yes, I think we do need a member of the registrar constituency as soon as possible.
So this is Tim.
Yes, Tim?
You know, I would like to be that member, and I'll put myself out there for now for lack of having anybody else, just so that we have it covered. The only issue is that I'm on vacation through next week, and after this call, I might find it difficult to be able to sneak in anything else without my wife putting the hammer down. So
that would mean you'd be up for the next week, but you'd be there the second week.
Right, right.
Is there somebody else that could
Well, I will try, Chuck, but I mean, yeah. You know, I'm sitting here, you know.
I will also, I'll send out email to the chair of the registrar constituency asking.
Okay, that'd be great.
Thanks,
okay,
Sam.
Thank you. Okay, so if no one else has any objection to that, and Tricia, I would like to prevail on your patience just a little further, and even though I need to leave the meeting at exactly in 16 minutes, if other people want to stay and continuing discussing, but we need to get the motion on travel arrangements for Cairo approved, otherwise nobody will have tickets because the staff deadline for us to make that decision is today. So, Tricia, can I prevail on you for a couple more minutes?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, thank you, and I apologize. We have a motion that I've made, hasn't been seconded, came out of the special meeting that we had last week. It's been circulated to the whole list. I will skip the whereases, but it's a long list of everything that led us here. The last one being in recognition of the general agreement that the methods used for this resolution are a one-time Cairo, and that further discussion will need to be held on the travel policy itself, as well as its implementation in the GNSO once the reorganization of the GNSO and its council is underway. Resolved, the names in the following list will be provided to ICANN travel staff as required by the policy on 4 September 2008. And the names were John Bing, Olga Cavalli, Avri Doria, Robin Gross, Tony Harris, Carolyn Hoover, Zahid Jamil, Norbert Klein, Christina Rosette, who is marked only for hotel, Mark Rodenbaugh, Philip Shepard, and Clark Walker. This is 12 out of 13 possible slots for travel. That the level of participation that is defined in the travel policy can be met by participation in all sessions to be scheduled by the GNSO, including the weekend sessions, to be held on 1-2 November, and that exceptions can be made for travelers whose employment requirements make it difficult to arrive on time for meetings on 1 November. And three, that the two GNSO council members, Uta Decker and Greg Ruth, who are also members of the nominating committee, will receive transportation to the meeting and expenses starting Thursday of ICANN week as members of the NOMCOM, and that the balance of their expenses will be covered as the per diem rate defined by the travel policy from the DNSO-GNSO fund. The DNSO secretariat is authorized to cover those expenses from the old DNSO-GNSO budget. So I have made that motion based on the discussions we had last Thursday. I don't have a seconder for this motion yet. Do I have a second?
I second it, Tony Hurst.
Okay, thank you, Tony. Is there any discussion before I ask for a vote on this?
This is Tim.
I have Chuck.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
I'm concerned because I don't believe that we've had sufficient time to really discuss, you know, what the basis of need is, if that's the criteria we're going to use. So clearly, you know, my view is this is right now just basically a statement of want on the parts of various parties. And the fact that the funds do roll over from meeting to meeting, but they don't roll over from year to year, might create an issue down the road where we find that we would prefer to use these funds in another way, and that for now that we only allow funding for one party per constituency at most at this particular point. Until those questions can be kind of resolved, with a little bit more time, a little bit more discussion, and that we would wouldn't amend the motion text other than those approved, that we amend to just the number one designated, or that designated as the number one party to fund for each constituency.
Okay. So basically you're proposing an amendment to this motion.
Yes.
And it's certainly not one that I accept as a friendly amendment, so we'll have to take a vote on that amendment before voting
and
on the
motion. And then I have another issue that I'd like to raise regarding voting. And I can throw that out there now, and then we can decide how to deal with it. But the other issue that I have is that any counselor on this call who is being proposed to be funded in whatever motion we end up with, I don't believe should be. I think there's a conflict of interest as far as the voting on the motion.
I think we're voting on a list. I mean, it was a process that was put through. We had a discussion on it. We don't have any policies by which, you know, we would be excluding almost half the people at this meeting, and essentially we will end up without a list today if because then we no longer have a quorum for voting.
But that's another issue. I mean, and that's part of the problem with this, just rushing this through. This is the first time that I'm aware of that the council has voted on something that actually provides monetary benefits to an individual counselor. And I think that's a huge issue. And instead of just saying, well, we're just going to brush that under the carpet right now and not deal with it, I think is a mistake. And I can't understand how any counselor who is on the list to be funded, you know, can, with, you know, in good conscience vote on that motion.
John, you wanted to speak. I have Chuck. If we don't have a list at the end of today, none of the people on this list will be coming to the meeting. But go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, we discussed this thoroughly at the registry constituency yesterday, and the constituencies not will support the motion as is because we believe that there should be a financial need. Now, let me clarify. We're not at this point talking about getting into the constituency first choice people. We think that can be left to the constituencies to decide. We believe that it should be a financial need there too, but we'll leave that up to the constituencies to decide that. On the other ones, we're fine with the NOMCOM and the chair issue. It's just the additional people who have not communicated the financial need, and we're really not trying to single out any person. It's not a personal issue. It's consistent with our statement all the way along that we believe there should be a financial need before the funds are provided.
So we're really only one person being talked about here.
Yeah, and it's not directed at him personally. It's just that we believe there should be financial need, not a philosophical reason.
Okay, jumping.
Yes, thank you. I'm also uncomfortable with this type of decision because it seems to me that under my own administrative understanding, my administrative role, we would be disqualified in making such a decision, though it seems to be a few other alternatives. Also, taking myself as an example, not to put anyone else on the spot, I agreed to become a non-com appointee on certain on a proposition from ICAS, which included what sort of coverage would be offered for my travel expenses. And I don't think, perhaps, that we as a group are competent to make amendments in that understanding, which is between me and ICAS. That, and not please understand me, no such suggestion has been made, but in principle, it relates to that arrangement.
Philip, do you want to cue?
And Alan.
Philip and Alan. Okay, go ahead, Philip.
Thanks. I mean, I do share the discomfort expressed both by Tim and indeed by John in what we are being forced to do. The only reason we're being forced to do it is that ICAM's travel policy has been partial and not complete. It reflects exactly the issues that we raised when the proposal was first made. We said it was going to be divisive, and it would also raise questions of ethics. If we were a board of directors, we would not be able to, under most types of law, be able to vote in this way for funds that could be seen to be directly beneficial in this way. And I would have thought those same governance principles would probably apply to council. As we take our decisions on a collegiate or constituency basis, and as one vote for one councillor may affect the funding within the constituency, to my mind, the ethical dimension extends not just to nominated councillors, but to every constituency and every part of this council who's been asked to vote. So if there is an ethical consideration about any one person being able to vote or not, I think there is an ethical consideration for all of us on council being able to vote on this issue, as I said, which has been forced upon us simply because of an extremely bad and ill-thought-out policy that ICANN is imposing upon us. Having said that, from a purely pragmatic perspective, because I believe the travel policy is there to get people to meetings to do the policy stuff, not the admin stuff, we would be in support of the motion as done, so that we can get the pragmatic side done, or we can get people to Cairo, or we can get on with the stuff that matters for the rest of the world, and we try to sort out these ethical problems subsequently, and raise an objection based on those to the ICANN General Counsel for his advice subsequent to taking a vote on this travel policy.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Two quick points. Regarding NOMCOM, my understanding was the policy as issued said that money was provided for NOMCOM, so it's not really a council vote on that. Are we still here?
Right. They're just on the list. Yes.
Okay.
Someone dropped off, I believe.
Okay. So that I don't think that one's really an issue. Regarding abstaining and not voting for councils who are receiving money, abstaining is typically a matter of conscience, sometimes guided by law. And I would think that if someone is voting based on the decisions that their constituency made, that I see no problem at all them relaying that answer.
if there's a situation where the constituency did not make a decision and it's the person's own position they're representing, and then I think they have to abstain. But that's really up for each person to decide which category they fall in.
Now, Aubrey, I wonder if there's if we could just eliminate the three NOMCOM appointees from this motion and at least narrow the problem somewhat.
This is Tim. Isn't the NOMCOM, let me just understand, the NOMCOM are being funded by a combination of NOMCOM meeting money and the funds that we have left over from...
Okay, yeah, we're at the confusing point on NOMCOM, and that's why there's the NCAs, NOMCOM appointees, and then there's the NOMCOM members. The NCAs are covered in the travel budget, and they're the first three names on that, so I cross categories being both a NOMCOM and current chair. The NOMCOM committee members, Uta and Greg, are the ones that are being funded in a binary, in a twofold way, partly by NOMCOM and partly by the funds from the DNSO, GNSO funds.
I think the official term is delegate.
Delegate, thank you. So, first of all, we may have nothing to vote on because we don't have a second on this motion yet. And then basically what I would like to do, given that we're at the end of our time, is if there is a second on this motion, then I have an amendment, which I take a vote on, which is to only to basically take the list and basically remove anyone that is either not an NCA or a first choice or a financial need, which is basically everyone except Philip. If I understand the amendment, is only first choice and financial needs, and leaving in the other two proposals. So that amendment would be basically an amendment to remove Philip from the list, if I understand the amendment correctly. We would vote on that amendment, and then if that passes, Philip is removed from the list. If that doesn't pass, then we vote on the whole list.
A point of information, Avery.
Yes.
I have neither expressed financial need one way or the other. A recent posting I sent to the list said I think this raises privacy concerns.
Mm.
And I also made the point that the ICANN travel policy itself does not raise a point about need. This has only been raised by the members of the registry and the registrar constituencies. So I have been silent on that question.
Actually, it was raised. It was not part of the policy, but it was mentioned in the FAQ.
It was mentioned as a possibility, not as a requirement.
That's correct.
The second point of information, I think, Avery, your motion has been seconded by Tony Harris, I believe.
Oh, that's right, it has. I'm sorry. I got so mixed up here.
The proposed amendment has not been.
Okay.
And so, Tim, you know, just to be clear, I mean, it isn't that we just haven't. I mean, if need is going to be the basis on which we decide how to allocate funds, then we need to discuss that more in depth. If there's another basis, then that needs to be. The point is that we haven't really had sufficient opportunity as a council to decide how these funds should be allocated.
And that's what we were
all
doing.
All 10 spots right now, regardless of having
this process
decided, is what the issue is. So I'm not proposing we take Philip off the list. I don't really appreciate that.
Well, we need to make a decision today.
Well, what I was proposing was that no more than one representative of any nature, councilor or otherwise, per constituency, be funded.
Okay, so that's your amendment. So it has nothing to do, basically, that you want to restrict the list to the NCAs plus the constituency first choices.
Exactly.
Okay, so there is a motion and there's a proposed amendment. Is there a seconder for that amendment? Hearing no second for that amendment, we don't vote on it. We go to vote on the motion. I call a roll vote on this motion, please.
Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
Yes, but I'd like to make just a statement on a conflict issue real quickly. I am an attorney, and I take that seriously. From the business constituency perspective, we vote with the business constituency viewpoints, but I think just broader than that, in this situation, all counselors should be encouraged to vote because we are, in fact, all representing our constituencies rather than just ourselves. That'd be me. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Zahi Jamil?
Yes.
Uta Deka?
Yes.
Christina Rosette?
Yes, but I am also cognizant of the ethical issue that Tim has raised, and I certainly think it's something that we need to address as we develop whatever further comments we are going to be developing as a council on the policy.
Cyril Chua has dropped off the call. Do you want me to send the motion?
This is not a policy decision going to the board or the election of an individual or an issues report, which were the three categories singled out.
Okay. Tony Harris?
Yes.
Greg Ruth is not on the call. Robin Gross?
Yes.
Norbert Klein has also dropped off the call. Tim Ruiz?
I'd like to also record a comment with my vote. I vote no, and for two reasons. One is that sufficient time hasn't been given to discuss proper allocation method for these funds, and we haven't had sufficient opportunity to discuss the potential conflict of interest issue that it raises when counselors who are receiving financial benefits are also voting on the motion that provides them.
Thank you. Jordy?
No. No.
Chuck?
No.
John Bing?
Abstain.
Avery Doria?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli? Olga? Seven, yes. Six, no, and one abstention.
That's six total votes, no. And one abstention.
Sorry, eight. Yes.
Excuse me, eight, what was eight?
Eight, yes. That's Philip, Mike, Zahid, Uta, Christina, Robin, and Avery voted yes. That's
and Tony
eight.
Harris did too.
Sorry, Tony Harris, yes, indeed. That's eight.
Okay. So that must
and
be
no. Six no's and one abstention. That's three votes no, counting for six. Three people voted no, which counts six votes, and one abstention for one. So that's seven.
So a majority have approved the motion.
Hmm.
Okay, yes. Yeah, I see that Olga did drop out. Okay, with apologies, we're now at the point I'd like, though, to go to item 10 and give Tricia a chance to start this conversation. I need to drop out. Chuck, can you continue with the meeting?
Yes.
Okay, so I turn the chair of the meeting over to Chuck, and apologies for needing to drop out.
Thanks,
Thank
Robert.
You.
Okay, so item 10, discussion with Patrick Sherry. I assume you're Patrick Sherry, Tricia. So, anyway, yeah, Tricia, do you want to make an introductory statement here with regard to the ALAC review?
Chuck, my screen says Tricia has disconnected. Yeah, she's back on.
She's just returned.
Yeah, thank you, Tricia. I don't know if you've heard.
Sorry about that. I was
it just completely cut at that moment. So
okay.
I'm not quite sure whether somebody did that deliberately on the call. I'm only joking. But I had to smile, but I'm back.
Okay. Would you like to make an introduction to the ALAC review, not necessarily going over the details, but in terms of to kick off our discussion?
Yes. Firstly, Patrick, as you know, couldn't be here, so I'm here for both of us. Denise, I think, is probably still on the call. But essentially, just by way of background, we are looking to submit to CAIRO, or in time for CAIRO, our initial thinking, our current thinking document, the equivalent that we did for the GNSO review. And in order to do that, it also has to be translated. So we've got a pretty tight time scale. And the objective is the final report goes to the Mexico City meeting. So although the public comment period doesn't close until the 12th of September, we are proactively encouraging input and comments in advance to help us in our initial drafting. And it's been very interesting in going out and collecting input. So really, in terms of today, and I might need a bit of a steer from Avery in terms of whether it's an individual view or a constituency view, because I still get into trouble in some of this, but basically what really we would like is really some initial comments, feedback on the review. And also, in particular, we singled out that it's open for everything, recommendation 12, which picks up on NCUC and ALAC. And in this respect, and I'm not sure whether everybody has seen it, but Cheryl sent a very helpful note round. But generally, it's really collecting that initial feedback, because with the GNSO review, we found that perhaps some of the written comments were not as forthcoming, and so we're actually going out with our feet to listen and ask for people's comments. So Avery and Chuck, basically, I'm here to listen and to perhaps give you the opportunity as well to discuss any points coming out, and particularly, as I say, around this recommendation 12.
Okay. Benefit of those who may not have recommendation in front of them, it reads as follows, and it can be found on I think page 71 of the review, if you have that. It reads that the ALAC should explore ways to differentiate between organizations that genuinely represent individual Internet users and are therefore ALS candidates, as opposed to those which may be a better fit with the NCUC. So I will take a cue on that. Whoever would like to comment. Who would like to get in the queue?
Alan.
Alan, okay.
Philip,
good. Anybody else? I'll put myself in the queue, too. And if anybody else wants to join after we proceed, that would be fine. So let's start off with Alan.
Just a quick comment. It's not obvious that the question is quite applicable. The bylaws are very explicit in that no one is prohibited from being part of a GNSO constituency just because they're part of another constituency. And it's not clear to me that it's an either-or choice, that there could well be organizations that want to participate in NCUC and are interested in participating in the generic top-level domain policy discussion and feel they have a position where they want to represent user interests on an ICANN-wide advisory committee. So it's not at all clear that anywhere it says that it has to be an either-or.
Okay. Tricia, any comments on that?
No, I think I actually agree that And it's really a part of that. There's clearly overlap, and this is clearly something that the working group is needing to consider. So, but I actually agree with Alan's comments that there is provided any requirements are met, that there it isn't an either or. But I think there is overlap, and perhaps that's one of the things in getting comments.
Indeed, the point I was making is the question is worded implying overlap, and I think that biases the answers.
Okay. Well, I didn't write that.
No, I wasn't accusing it. It came from the review group.
And this,
okay.
This is Tim.
Do you want an EQ, Tim, or do you want to talk about this specific topic?
Well, that specific topic.
Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I was just going to ask then that, I mean, I understand that, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. It's just then that, would that opportunity then be open to other constituencies? I mean, because there really isn't, I'm not aware of any way to like, start an advisory committee in a similar manner as to, you know, joining a constituency or starting a new constituency. You know, that opportunity obviously exists. So I think that just needs to be considered. And I'm not saying, you know, for registrars, but I'm talking about other constituencies that may, you know, look or want an opportunity to engage in an advisory committee, so to speak. I mean, it's if we're going to have one, you know, the user group have that opportunity, then I would imagine others would want that as well.
Point is well taken.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Philip.
Thanks. In a sense, recommendation 12 is simultaneously the most important recommendation in the entire report as far as the GNSO is concerned, and at the same time is out of date. The reason being is that the board have just passed the bicameral proposal, which is predicated on the concept of a non-commercial group, which is going to be a radically reformed broader group, represents it formed from essentially the starting point of being the NCUC and some part of the at large, as yet unspecified. Given that, and this differentiation is either less important or more important, depending on how you look at it. Second comment I'd make, I think, also goes back to Alan's earlier reference to the bylaws. I've never fully understood the rationale, nor have had good explanation, really, behind the existing bylaw in terms of participation in multiple constituencies. The only sensible story I have heard was that in particular it was, you know, considering companies maybe like, let's take British Telecom as an example, who may simultaneously be an ISP, they may have intellectual property to protect, another department term there, and they may be a registrar, and it would be unreasonable to say you have to be in one constituency. By the time you extend that particular bylaw to things like at-large and SMEs, you tend to end up, and I think that is where the consultants felt there was some discomfort on this point, with more the concept of sort of whim, or indeed we've seen individuals in the past just choosing to be in multiple constituencies because they like making more noise. And I think it's those things that have not helped in the process. So I think this is a very pertinent recommendation at this time. That perhaps we need to look at in a slightly different light in view of the board's acceptance of the bicameral proposal.
Thank you, Philip. And my comment is a little bit related to Philip's first comment there. In the GNSO structure group, we specifically talked about the participation of the at-large, the ALAC or at-large itself, in the broader sense, in terms of participation in the GNSO. And Alan, you can jump in on this if you like, but Alan certainly communicated to us on that working group that the at-large, the ALAC itself, was not looking for any participation directly in the GNSO, but definitely wanted the opportunity for individual users to participate in the GNSO in their own capacity. Did I capture that correctly, Alan?
Pretty much. Certainly, the ALAC has no interest. We're interested in participating in the process of helping to grow constituencies, just because starting these things is difficult. And we think similarly for railroads. Whether an ALS, a local regional, a local group wants to participate in NCUC or some new constituency is really up to them. Each of these groups have their own life. Many of them are ISOC chapters. That doesn't mean ISOC participates in the GNSO. They just have different hats they wear at different times, and that may well come to be. But the senior at large, that is ALAC and its direct minions, I don't see on the long term any participation other than in the very short term helping in the formative stages.
Thank you. Okay, and I just wanted to share that, Tricia, in case that's helpful.
Yes, noted. Thank you.
Is there anybody else that would like to be on the queue on Recommendation 12? Okay, then I believe it. Tricia, do you have any specific questions with regard to Recommendation 12 that you would like to put out to the council?
No, I mean, I think I agree with Flip to say that this is probably one of the most important from a GNSO perspective. And just to assure Philip, or reassure Philip, obviously in terms of things that are emerging in terms of structure arising from the GNSO review, which I'm following, as I said, with distant interest, obviously that has to get fed in to the ALAC review working group as well. But even with that, it's not an easy... I think it's going to be one of those areas that's probably going to be more complex than a lot of them. And I suppose one of the questions, or one of the things, I'd be interested in the view of council members, and to this, I'm assuming here you're speaking all as individuals rather than of your constituency, is there are some thoughts that perhaps as the ALAC has, and as ICANN constituencies have grown, that perhaps some of the reason why there may be some complexities and that make it not an easy one is that the ALAC has its role as an advisory committee in a similar way that other advisory committees have, but it also has its members or the individual users fit in other places. And I think as ICANN has grown and as the structures have grown, it's really looking at that and just considering whether or not there are any adjustments or recommendations that should be made in that. And I can tell you that from the group discussions, this is one where, you know, there are views at opposite ends of the spectrum on it. So our thinking is very new. So just perhaps maybe the council members might like to give some feedback in that respect. And I would like to allow, as I can see Avery probably thinking about time here, I would also like to obviously give everybody the opportunity to comment on other points other than Recommendation 12.
Yes, and we'll do that shortly. Just to let you know, because I think you dropped off when Avery had to leave. She had a hard drop off it on the hour. So anybody like to be in the queue before we open it up just to the general, the whole report? Anybody want to get in the queue with regard to Tricia's last comment?
It's Alan. I have a very quick statement.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Alan.
Yeah, I'll just give an example of something that comes to mind. When we get to the stage where there is a robust user stakeholder group with all sorts of flavors represented, one of the questions that will then come up is there a need for an ALAC liaison? And I think that's one of the examples of structural things that may come out of this revised GNSO
once it actually becomes up and running and is carrying out its purpose.
Okay, then let's open it up to the entire ALAC review report and see if there's anyone else that has any feedback to Tricia. Anybody want in the queue in that regard? While you're thinking about that, I'll make a kind of a general comment. And that is that just like with the GNSO, where constituencies are going to be required to certify their representativeness and openness and transparency and so forth, it seems natural that the ALAC would have the same requirements with regard to representativeness to ensure that the ALAC itself is not just a small group of people who are providing input into policy processes, but rather that, in fact, the ALAC is representing the views of the larger at-large community. So it seems to me that the same sort of goals would be very appropriate for the ALAC as with the GNSO. Anybody else want to get in the queue? Tricia, do you have any other specific questions you'd like?
No, not really. As I say, this is initial gathering, and obviously there's still the 12th of September for inputting, and as we're trying to, not to fast track, but to actually to, as I say, get the current thinking for Cairo, but then really have the Mexico for the final report. We and this is where all of the points are very helpful that have come out today, in addition, obviously, to things that are posted. So, no, I'm sure there'll be other occasions when the group and perhaps other members of the group will participate when we've got further information that's there, but all of the points have been very helpful.
Thank you very much, Tricia, for staying with us for such a long period of time, and for filling in for Patrick. We might very much appreciate that, and encourage you on the remaining work that has to be done in this review.
Thank you very much. And obviously, the experience of having worked with you on the GNSO review has been very helpful in this process as well. So, and actually, I was sitting here doing quite a lot of work, and whilst the discussion was going on, and found it very interesting. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Now, unless there's huge objections, and of course we've had quite a few people drop off, although there's still quite a few on according to the meeting view, I think it's best to move the other business item to the next meeting, and there are two things there. Does anybody seriously object to that, considering we're 25 minutes over? And then last of all, Glenn, I'd like to, there are several action items that each of us have to do with our constituencies based on motions that we've passed today. Is it possible for you to get just a reminder of what those action items are to the council right after this meeting so that it'll kind of be a little safe way of making sure that all of us communicate with our constituencies on the critical items, some of which need to be discussed very quickly in constituencies in preparation for our next couple meetings?
I'll do that, Chuck.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Does anybody have anything else before I adjourn the meeting? Thanks, everybody, for hanging in so long on this one, and have a good weekend coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.